Well, hello there, ladies and gentlemen, and good evening. The MSS crew is back, as guaranteed, and we are thanking you for joining us here in the Fred Bertelsen Memorial Old Time Radio Room of RadioOutOfThePast.org. The date, Saturday, January 23rd, 2016. And this is your MSS host, Luis Jr., assisting with bringing to you yet another exciting and exhilarating internet broadcast of Michael's Saturday Night Surprise. And unfortunately, I've had to dig myself out of a winter storm here to, get this thing going here tonight. But don't worry, I am okay. I am bundled up, and I am warm. But I don't know how many of you are dealing with a winter storm right now, but let me tell you, it's cold. It's time for me to get things rolling by introducing the presenter for tonight's program. She just so happens to be an old-time veteran of old-time radio and the sternest librarian you would ever meet. And if you haven't guessed it already, yep, it is Joy Jackson's turn tonight. So why don't we just sit back, relax, grab our favorite drinks and snacks, and enjoy the OTR stylings of J.J. Jackson. Joy, the microphone is yours.
Thanks, Luis. Welcome to the MSS edition of Treasures Old and New from ART. We have an East Coast, West Coast theme going on tonight. My first show is from my compadres in Lexington, Kentucky. It's a lost Richard Diamond episode called The Poise Magazine Story.
American Radio Theater presents a lost episode from the golden age of radio. Rexall, the makers of Rexall drug products, and 10,000 independent Rexall family druggists bring you Richard Diamond, Private Detective.
For heaven's sake, don't sneak up on me like that, Rick.
Hello, Bridgie. What's new in the mop pail department?
What do you have a white suit on for?
It was originally blue, but I got caught in the rain.
Well, when you get to your office, rinse it out in your inkwell.
I use green ink.
All the better. Oh, it gives me the chills just looking at you.
This is the season for white, Bridgie. Why don't you break out in a white dress?
Me in a white dress? Well, with my shape, I'd look like a walking scoop of ice cream. Vanilla.
Bridgie, I've seen a lot of women in my day, and I'd pick you anytime. You're my style.
I haven't been in style since 1908, and then only for a couple of days. Now, before I break down and tell you the horrible story of my life, I let a man in your office.
Who?
Tall, slim, good-looking. Might have been a rumba dancer. Said he was a detective friend of yours.
Ah, well, that's Swifty Miller. He's okay, Bridgie.
Now get to work before the temptation overcomes me to throw a ripe tomato at your suit.
Oh, you wouldn't do anything like that.
Oh, no. Ask Teddy Roosevelt.
Rick. I've got to take a sudden trip, and I'm working on a job that's going to need some help.
What's the rumble, Swifty?
Just keeping tabs on a girl.
Oh, well, that's the kind of work I like.
And this one won't be too hard to follow. She just pulls men after her. And looks. Well, they're too good to be true.
Don't oversell it. I was gone on the word girl. Now, who is she? What does she do? So on.
Name of Madeline Granger. Occupation? Head accountant for a women's magazine named Poise.
I can see I'm going to need my Argyle socks and my gold huckster layer.
Oh, just don't start thinking of cocktails at 5 or maybe spaghetti later at her place.
Why? You hold the mortgage?
No, it's just that you're not going to talk to her much.
Oh, I'm 2 blocks away behind a newspaper, huh?
No, you're going to get closer. but not close enough to let her know who you are or what you're doing.
Well, what's she done? Stabbed her grandmother?
It's a case I've been working on for 6 months, Rick. She's promised to make out some affidavits for me, and she's important. It'd take me a year to tell you everything, and I don't have that much time.
All right, Swifty. You know what you're doing. Where do I start?
At the magazine office. I've already arranged it with the building owner. You're to pose as an architect checking fault lines or something in the building. That'll give you a chance to walk around the offices watching her.
Well, I have an old slide rule that'll come in handy.
Now look, I've been posing as an advertising man in case my name comes up in conversation.
You said I shouldn't get close enough to hear any conversations.
All right, Rick. If it works out, maybe you do chomp a couple of gin-dipped olives. But talk about Frank Lloyd Wright or the Parthenon or something.
Okay, when will you be back?
Within 24 hours, don't worry. Do you think you can stay up all night and watch her apartment? From the outside?
Ah, you make everything difficult, don't you, Swifty? Well, I'll try.
Okay. Well, I've got to run, Rick. I'll take over when I get back. Here. Here's a day in advance.
Oh, Swifty, if there's one guy in this world I trust, it's you.
Oh, go on, take it. Who knows? I might get hit by a bolt of lightning in an hour.
I'd heard they had some doll-type women at Poise Magazine, leftovers from Miss America contests and such, so I changed into my architect's costume, corduroy coat, slide rule, tape measure, and a faraway look as if I were always listening for the Empire State Building to fall. Then I reported to Poise, with as much as I could muster. When I saw the layout, I'd have taken the job for nothing, paid even, especially when I saw the managing editor herself. Celeste Phillips, it said on the door.
Is there something you want?
Well, why burden you with my sudden greedy desires? I'll be satisfied just to walk around and look.
I don't understand.
My name's Diamond. I'm an architect. The building owner sent me to check some structural problems.
Well, in that case, Mr. Diamond, start checking structures.
Well, I've already started. You're good for years. I walked through more loveliness in an hour than a casting director sees in a year. It was an all-woman magazine. Editors, writing, advertising, makeup women, copy girls. Any minute, I expected to bump into Phil Spitalny. I peeked into photography rooms where models posed, and art departments where more models posed, and hallways where models waited to pose. Oh, it was grand. I was humming and busily measuring here and there. I've almost forgot my purpose, to see Madeline Granger. She was in accounting, and what a figure. Just as Swifty had said.
What are you doing in my office?
Oh, I'm sorry, ma'am. I didn't mean to disturb you. I'm an architect, making an inspection.
Oh, I didn't mean to speak sharply. I was just surprised to see a man in here.
Did I get the wrong door?
No, this is my office. Accounting, if that's what you wanted.
Oh, well, my name is Diamond.
Very nice. Mind if I just sit here and watch you inspect?
Well, if you must. Well, I measured and computed for as long as I dared until a cretin could have figured out that I didn't know a crossbeam from Radio City. Then I took a break and talked with Madeline. Asked her if she'd like to go out and share a malted milk with me. Spiked, of course.
What a nice idea.
Then let's go.
I've got to take these charts down the hall first. I'll be right back.
I was being paid to follow her. But in the maze of offices, women, and doors, she eluded me. I was about to go back to her desk and wait when...
What was that?
Madeline!
She was just by the elevator.
I ran through the women who came out of offices and even saw another man out of the corner of my eye hurrying somewhere. There were people standing around an open elevator shaft, the service elevator. I looked down. 8 stories below was something that used to be Madeline Granger.
Oh,
locked all the doors and told everybody to stay here, but anybody could have come in or out since you called, Rick.
Walt, what difference does it make who went in or out?
Well, I like to get statements. It looks good on the record.
You think she was pushed down that elevator shaft?
No, that's a rare and unusual type of crime. Probably had an accident or committed suicide.
Well, that about covers all its possibilities.
Oh, Rick, knock off the smart talk. This is serious business. Got any information?
You know, Swifty Miller?
Best private detective in town.
Yeah, well, that's all the information you're going to get out of me.
Oh, you want me to hold your hand?
All right. If you're going to threaten me. Swifty hired me to watch Madeline Granger to see that no harm came to her.
And you wanted a compliment a minute ago.
Well, I wasn't supposed to bodyguard or just watch. Swifty thought she might leave the country or take poison or turn into a butterfly some night. She was going to give some evidence in a case he was working on.
What case?
Ask Swifty.
Funny he'd hire you for a job when he could do it himself.
For your information, he's out of town.
Where?
Check the trains, planes, the buses, taxis, maybe also the state police.
Who is he working for?
Again, you'll have to ask him. I don't know where he is. Walt, cross my heart and hope to look like you when I grow old if it isn't true.
Did you talk with Madeline Granger before?
Yes. Lovely, delightful. In fact, no depression, hysteria, nervousness, or otherwise extravagant behavior.
Do you think it was suicide?
Well, now that you pinned me down, I again refer you to Swifty Miller. He'll be back in 24 hours.
No, okay, Rick. We'll list it as a probable suicide until we hear from him.
I looked around a little more, but my heart wasn't in it. The old gaiety just wasn't there to recapture. I walked down to the street trying to figure something out without anything to go on. Spent the afternoon and evening poking around and got nowhere. Then went home into bed. Madeline Granger had died less than 50 feet away from me, and I still didn't have answers to the questions that I knew Swifty Miller was going to ask me the next day. Around 5 the following afternoon, the phone rang and everything became more jumbled than ever. Diamond?
Rick, this is Swifty. Get over here.
Where are you, Swifty?
My office. I just got back into town. Stopped a whole gun full of bullets.
I was on the phone to police emergency and then to Walt Levinson. In the heavy afternoon traffic, it took my cab 15 minutes to get to Swifty Miller's office. Walt had beaten me there.
Hi, Rick.
How is he, Walt?
Dead.
I took a look at the body. There were 3, maybe 4 bullets in him, and the score was mounting. A dead girl and a dead detective who was following her, and I didn't have the remotest idea of what it was all about.
Rexall, the makers of Rexall drug products, and 10,000 independent Rexall family druggists are bringing you Richard Diamond, private detective.
Last week, a customer told me,
"Something I really like about Rexall Milk of Magnesia is that one bottle won't be so thick I can't even pour it, and the next one thin and watery. Somehow, Rexall Milk of Magnesia always seems to be just right."
Well, ma'am, that's because every bottle of Rexall Milk of Magnesia has to meet an exacting standard of viscosity, or it won't wear the Rexall label.
What do you mean by viscosity?
Well, an easy definition would be the degree of thickness in a liquid. Now, Rexall scientists conduct scientifically precise tests on every batch of Rexall Milk of Magnesia to make sure it meets this constant standard of viscosity. That's one big reason that you'll always get a uniform dosage from every bottle.
Oh, and I thought it was all just an accident.
No, ma'am. There are no accidents behind the fact you can always depend on any drug product that bears the name Rexall.
We now return to the Poise Magazine story, tonight's thrilling adventure with Richard Diamond, detective.
I never have been able to take homicide casually, and Swifty Miller's death was doubly hard to take. He'd been my friend. We were in the same business, and we'd been working on the same case, whatever it was. The coroner was of the opinion the slugs were .32s or smaller caliber, fired at close range. Walt Levinson and I poked around the office looking for something that might tell us why Swifty had died, who had killed him, or who he had been working for. The office files turned up nothing. Poise Magazine or Madeline Granger weren't even mentioned. But I had better luck when I went through Swifty's wallet.
Get another picture of the desk.
Okay, Sergeant.
Walt!
Yeah?
Yeah, come here.
You find something?
Yeah, maybe. Shut the door, huh?
Sure. All right. What is it?
This. One canceled round-trip flight ticket to Bermuda.
Bermuda? Swifty didn't strike me as the vacationing kind.
And it's a cinch he wasn't following the crops. Walt, yesterday when he came by my office and told me about Madeline Granger, he said he was taking a trip. This must have been it.
Yeah, but what kind of fun can you have flying there and back in 24 hours?
Well, maybe he didn't go for fun. Besides, this is the off-season.
I'll have some men check the airlines to make sure. Anything else?
Just this slip of paper. It's Swifty's handwriting.
Let's see. It says Cooperative Publishing Company. You suppose he was working for them, whoever they are?
It could be. Save your fat little finger, Walt.
I was just calling information.
No, they don't have any. I just tried myself.
Oh. Maybe it's an out-of-town concern.
Yeah. Probably in Bermuda, someplace like that.
Yeah. Well, I'll have to worry about that later. Right now, I have to notify his people. Know who they are, Rick?
Just his mother. She lives in Scarsdale.
Want to go with me?
No, thanks, Walt. That's another thing about homicide I never gotten used to. Notifying the nearest of kin. I decided to stop in and talk to some people at Poise Magazine. The recent demise of their chief accountant, Madeline Granger, hadn't upset the office decorum too much, but I did sense that the receptionist outside Celeste Phillips' office had been affected by something.
Well?
I'd like to see Miss Phillips, please.
Is that so?
Cross my heart.
What do you wish to see Miss Phillips about?
Honey, I'm the architect. Don't you remember me?
You can't see Miss Phillips.
Why not?
Miss Phillips is busy. She's not seeing anyone.
I think she'll see me. Tell her Mr. Diamond is out here.
I'm sorry, but I really cannot.
Let him come in, Renee. He's an honest man.
That voice did not belong to Celeste Phillips unless she had been taken with a cold. As it turned out, it belonged to a man with a clean, ruddy face touched off by a carefully clipped gray mustache. He was standing in the doorway to Celeste Phillips' office, striking a dignified pose. There was an expensive briefcase under one arm, and the elegant Homburg and the well-tailored pinstripe tagged him as a successful member of the legal profession. He looked vaguely familiar.
Mr. Diamond, it's none of my business to inquire what you're doing here, but I know you by reputation, and I have long looked forward to the pleasure of meeting you under any circumstance. I am Aaron Caesar.
Oh. I've heard of you, Mr. Caesar, and I'm also aware of your reputation in our courts of law.
Well, then I am flattered, sir.
I was just thinking that possibly we had met somewhere else.
Hardly. I would remember that occasion, I assure you. Come in.
Thank you.
Celeste, outside of myself, I would say this is the only other honest man I've ever seen in your office. This is Mr. Diamond, the famous detective.
Of course. I've heard of you, Mr. Diamond.
Miss Phillips.
Well, I was just leaving. The field is yours, Mr. Diamond.
You want it mowed, planted, plowed, or irrigated?
What? Oh, very good.
Goodbye, Aaron.
Goodbye, Celeste, Mr. Diamond.
Today, a private investigator. Yesterday, an architect.
Well, I gave it up. Somebody burned all my bridges.
What will you be tomorrow, Mr. Diamond?
Well, a magazine publisher, I hope. I was thinking of buying the Cooperative Publishing Company. They tell me it's a pretty exciting concern to get involved with.
I never heard of them. Are they located in New York?
Sort of, yeah. There's one office here and another one in Bermuda.
Bermuda? Really?
Well, not exactly.
Oh, I see.
Do you?
No. But I want to be helpful in whatever little game you're playing, Mr. Diamond.
Very thoughtful, Miss Phillips.
Suppose you call me Celeste, and I'll call you Rick. Now, tell me more about this cooperative publishing house.
A company. It's something I just ran across recently. They sort of specialize in true-to-life murder stories.
Why, what do you mean?
A man who had a very big interest in them went out and got himself killed a few hours ago. His name was Swifty Miller. Some people thought he was in the advertising business, especially Madeline Granger.
Why, that's terrible. Why should he be killed?
For one reason. He knew what Madeline Granger knew. For another reason, he was a private detective working on a case.
A private detective. Oh, I see. And you've been working with him?
Yes, that's right. I sort of specialize in the murder end of things.
Well, what case?
That's why I'm here, Celeste. Thought maybe you could tell me.
Goodness. You're confusing me, and I'm not easily confused.
Yeah, I'm confusing myself.
I'm afraid I'm not very good at this sort of talk, Mr. Diamond.
Mr. Diamond, a minute ago I was Rick.
I don't know what you are exactly, but I've got work to do. Would you think me rude if I asked you to leave?
I would.
Well, then I'll have to be rude, Mr. Diamond. Goodbye.
But I really...
Goodbye, Mr. Diamond.
And everyone else I talked to around the place acted the same way. A lesser man would have given up, and I'm the stubborn type. I took a spot outside the office building, hoping to waylay someone and talk to them on my terms. As it worked out, I was standing in front of a cigarette machine when a big black limousine pulled up at the curb. Two gentlemen were suddenly standing beside me.
Our car is right over here, Mr. Diamond.
Well, I was thinking of calling a taxi. Thanks, just the same.
Oh, but this is free.
No, probably not going in my direction.
Of course it's going in your direction.
What direction is that?
Who knows, Mr. Diamond? Perhaps all the way to Bermuda.
In a way, it was refreshing. I wasn't beaten, slugged, pushed, nudged, or even spoken to rudely. Finally, the limousine stopped in front of a brownstone mansion on Kincaid Avenue. I was ushered into a waiting room where a little old woman in a gray dress seemed to be waiting. She could have been 80 or 180. My guess was the top figure.
Mr. Diamond, I'll be brief and to the point. When I arrived in New York 2 hours ago, I was informed that Mr. Miller had been killed. I was also informed that you were an associate of his. Kindly explain that association.
Well, I'll be brief and to the point, too. I don't even know you. Why should I explain anything to you?
Don't be ridiculous.
Possibly you were Swifty's girlfriend.
Poby.
Yes?
Stand by. I may want you to muss this gentleman up after all.
Very well.
Mr. Diamond, I am Mrs. Charles Ellery, owner and publisher of Poise Magazine. Mr. Miller was working for me.
Oh. Well, in that case, I'm glad to meet you, Mrs. Ellery. You can tell Poby I'm all right.
Really?
Really. Up until now, I had no idea who Swifty had been working for or what he was trying to do.
He gave you no details?
No, but he was my friend. I'm going to find out who killed him. Here are my credentials.
Poby, you may go.
Yes, Mrs. Ellery.
He made a trip to Bermuda. See you?
That was unfortunate, Mr. Diamond. He didn't know I was on my way back here.
No, I guess not.
I apologize for my curtness, Mr. Diamond. I'm afraid I'm suspicious of everyone these days. When I phoned Swifty's office and found that he was murdered, I
understand. Now tell me, how did you come to hire Swifty?
6 months ago, my magazine circulation began to drop off. Advertisers were canceling contracts without reasonable notice. I became alarmed and suspected I don't know what. I engaged Mr. Miller to investigate.
What did he find out?
Nothing for a while. Then 2 days ago, he cabled me that he had located a witness who would be able to explain some important things. He also said the witness herself was involved and wanted to be assured of immunity in the event charges were filed.
That'd be Madeline Granger.
Obviously.
Then he was making the trip to Bermuda to arrange things with you, leaving me here to keep an eye on her.
I'd grown very fond of Mr. Miller. Do you have any idea what was going on, what it was all about?
I'm beginning to get one. Has anyone made you an offer for your magazine at a nice low figure, say, since your circulation dropped off?
Why, yes. As a matter of fact, someone has.
The Cooperative Publishing Company?
How did you know?
It's an old trick. Sabotage a business until it's on the ropes, then step in and buy it cheap and build it back up.
Do you think that's what's happening to my magazine?
I don't know, Mrs. Ellery, but I'll find out. A check with the Hall of Records revealed that the Cooperative Publishing Company had been licensed and given authority to engage in business in the state of New York a year before. None of its offices or guiding hands were listed, which is a reasonable practice for a dummy firm. However, the lawyer who had filed the corporate papers was a man named Aaron Caesar.
What was that, Mr. Diamond?
Who owns Cooperative Publishing Company?
Well, I believe it's defunct now.
Okay. Who did own it then?
Well, I drew up the papers and handled the business end of it for Madeline Granger.
Madeline Granger?
Yes, poor child. She did so want to be in business for herself.
Was she the only one behind it?
Yes, Mr. Diamond. She was the only one.
I didn't believe him, and 2 hours later, when he stepped outside his office and locked the door, I was waiting across the hall in a broom closet. When things got quiet, I glass-keyed my way inside and went right for his files. The corporation papers were there, drawn up very neatly. Madeline Granger wasn't the only officer in the Cooperative Publishing Company. Daphne Winters, Mary Lou Higgins, and a half a dozen other efficient, smart, alert, and sabotaging workers from Poise Magazine were also listed, including the managing editor, Celeste Phillips. It was easy to figure they were all in key jobs, systematically wrecking Poise Magazine. I stuffed the folder under my arm and was about to walk out when somebody walked in.
Mr. Diamond!
Hello, Celeste. Are we still speaking?
We are all speaking, Mr. Diamond. Close the outer door, Celeste.
Aaron Caesar looked elegant, standing behind an elegant-looking 32. Celeste closed the outer door, came back, drew the shades, and we got down to business. She held the gun while he walked over and relieved me of the folder.
Well, Mr. Diamond, I take it you were about to make off with these papers from my files?
You take it correctly, Mr. Caesar. I was about to.
And you've read this information?
I'm afraid I did peek a little. Forgiven?
Hardly. I thought Mr. Miller was extremely clever in coercing one of our associates into a promise of making a statement and bearing the facts contained in this folder, but you were taking the folder.
I'm a pressure worker, especially after you killed Swifty and Madeline Granger.
But we hardly counted on killing you.
Well, you'd have to count on it sooner or later, Mr. Caesar. You see, I remember where we met now. It was in the hallway yesterday, just after Madeline Granger went down that elevator shaft.
Yes, well. Celeste, my dear, give me the weapon and go into my outer office and bring me a pillow off the divan.
Aaron, you aren't going to...
Do as I say, please.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Do as he says, Celeste. Just another little old killing. He'll wrap the gun in a pillow so it'll smother the noise when he shoots me, and then you both can go out to dinner.
Aaron, I can't. There must be some other way. I didn't want any killing. I don't want any more.
This man has become dangerous to us.
But I haven't killed anyone, and neither have any of the other girls. We just wanted to get the magazine from Mrs. Ellery.
And we're still going to get it. Now give me the gun.
Aaron, I...
Don't trust him, honey. Maybe someday Homburg Head here will shove you down an elevator shaft, just the way he did Madeline Granger.
Shut up, Diamond. Celeste, give me that gun.
No, Aaron.
Give it to me.
I was waiting for that. He lunged for the gun in her hand, and she put up a fight.
You kidding?
It was pretty exciting. Celeste was pretty good.
Here, Mr. Diamond, you take the gun.
No.
I'd rather face a prison sentence than murder charges.
That's a smart girl, Celeste. Now, can you hold him while I call the police?
I don't think so.
In that case... As I was saying, my dear, in that case, I'll hold him, and you call the police.
This American Radio Theater presentation of Richard Diamond, Detective, starred Ivan Curry as Richard Diamond, with Laura Lynn Lahr as Celeste Phillips and Bob Hutcheson as Aaron Caesar. David Aaron Hiles played Swifty Miller, John Greenway was Walt Levinson, and Cindy Asher played Madeline Granger. Susie Hutcheson played Mrs. Ellery, Lee Delaney played Poby, and Jan Hanley was Bridgie. Also in our cast, you heard Joy Jackson, David Maddox, and Pam Hungate. Original music written and performed by Chad Rennie. The production was directed by Mike Wheeler. I'm your announcer, Tom Fitzpatrick, thanking you for listening and inviting you to join us again next time. This is ART, American Radio Theater.
Next, we turn our ears to the Seattle Ensemble and a recreation of The Magnificent Montague. It's called A Starring Role in Radio.
American Radio Theater presents a recreation of The Magnificent Montague, starring Greg Porter. This was the first episode, called A Starring Role in Radio. In 1926, reviewing Edwin Montague's King Lear, a critic referred to him as the Magnificent Montague. Edwin never forgave the critic for that understatement. Today, still happily married to his longtime leading lady, Lily Boehm, Edwin Montague remains true to his conviction that he is the world's greatest actor. In the last 8 years, he has refused to act in any play in which he did not have the starring role. In the last 8 years, he has refused to be in any drama in which he did not have the privilege of rewriting or directing personally. In the last 8 years, he hasn't worked. But Edwin Montague knows that there will be return of that golden era of the New York stage and Shakespeare. And when that time comes, he will be ready. By the way, that time right now is 2 p.m, and we're in the Montague apartment.
Okay, take it easy. This is the residence of Edwin Montague and Miss Lily Boehm. Yeah, they ain't up yet. Who knows when? They're actors. Could be 10 minutes or could be next Tuesday. Who knows?
I'll take it, Agnes.
Here, honey.
Please, get me some coffee. Hello, Charlie? Well, I really haven't asked Edwin yet. You see, now wait, Charlie. I promise I'll ask him as soon as he gets up. And what's more, you can tell them he'll take the job. Yes. Goodbye.
Here's your coffee, honey.
Yes. Agnes, what do you think? My husband, Edwin Montague, is going to work.
You're kidding.
No.
Well, this is the end of one of the world's biggest nonprofit organizations.
He's going into radio. Agnes, my coffee. You'll need to leave some dishes for him to smash when I tell him.
Radio? And he doesn't know yet?
Agnes, this job will snap him out of the dream he has that he's still the foundation of the American theater. Otherwise, he'll spend the rest of his life sitting around the proscenium club with those broken-down hams.
Don't you mean the rest of those broken-down hams?
Agnes, that will be quite enough.
The big matinee idol, the Sinatra of the 20s. The way he lords it around this house.
Agnes, stop!
The great Montague. More like the great windbag.
Stop!
The big actor. And all the time it was you that had more acting talent than he ever hoped to have.
Go on.
You know what, honey?
What?
You're a bigger ham than he is.
I never doubted it. Now, please, Agnes, no fights with him this morning. Everything has got to go right. Did you get his imported kippers?
No, I could only get the domestic kippers.
Oh, well, they're the same, aren't they?
Yeah, they're identical. They taste the same, smell the same, feel the same.
Good.
But he'll know the difference. I have never seen such a lowlife who lives so high.
Agnes, please.
English kippers, British clothes, imported shoes. What's he trying to do, pull England out of the red?
Agnes, please, just don't do anything that will irritate him this morning.
E-I-O. He's up.
Get his breakfast ready. He's doing his morning vocal exercises already. That means he's finished combing his beard.
Oh, brother, he takes care of that beard like he's a chorus girl with her first mink. Now he'll start roaming the hills.
I roam the hills of Rome.
Quick, Agnes, here he comes. Good morning, Edwin.
I roam the
Oh, good morning, Lily.
He made it.
Good morning, Agnes. I see you got here early this morning. I suppose you arrived by your usual transportation, a broom.
Edwin, please. It's a beautiful day, and I must say that you look very dashing this morning. Doesn't he, Agnes?
Oh, yeah. Think he's a regular dream.
Oh, Agnes.
Frankly, my dear Agnes, it is a little early to start debating our respective beauty. All I can say is that after 25 years of having to look at your face before eating breakfast, there can be only one epitaph on my tombstone. Edwin Montague. He had a strong stomach.
Please, please, no quarrels. Look, Edwin, Agnes fixed you a breakfast just the way you like it.
Well, there must be a first time.
Here, Edwin, your raw egg and Worcestershire sauce, kippered herrings, a broiled veal kidney, two mutton chops rare, and au gratin potatoes.
Yep, it's the breakfast of champions.
You go ahead and eat, Edwin. Oh, by the way, Charlie Forrester called this morning.
Oh.
He feels that at last he has found
the yuck!
What's the matter?
These are domestic kippers.
But Edwin...
Domestic kippers? What is this place becoming?
Now, Edwin...
This is another attempt by Agnes to poison me. Look at that kipper. It looks off.
Yeah, and what do you think the kipper's thinking about looking up at you?
Now you listen, Miss Housemaid of 1902. If you...
Edwin, we couldn't get imported kippers this morning. Now, could you please let me go on?
Sorry, dear. Go on. It was about Charlie.
Now, I don't want you to be shocked.
Shocked? Nothing could upset me after the excitement we had at the Proscenium Club last night. We had to drum Cecil Banks out of the organization.
Oh, poor old Cecil. What did he do?
We found out that Cecil is going into radio.
Radio?
Yes. And please don't make me repeat that word again. Cecil Banks, another deserter of the theater. I was up until 3 a.m. cutting out all reference to him in my memoirs.
Another name gone.
Radio. It's better to dig ditches. Now, what is this about Charlie?
Well, Edwin, Charlie Forrester has a job for you. The starring role.
I knew it. They finally found a Juliet for me.
It's not Romeo and Juliet.
Oh, it isn't?
No. You see, this job that Charlie has
Imagine
for you is...
Imagine it, all New York. They can't find a Juliet. Oh, if only you hadn't let yourself go. Well, never mind. Continue, darling. Tell me about the job. Well?
Edwin, what did you mean by, if I just hadn't let myself go?
Oh, now, Lily, I didn't mean your looks or that you're going to seed or anything like that.
Well, then, just what did you mean?
Well, I just meant that you had found new interests. Every afternoon you're busy as Secretary of the Women's Bird Watchers of America. That is all I meant.
Oh.
Why, Lily, honey, you are still as charming and captivating as you were the day I first picked you out of the chorus line of the Naughty Little Princess and made you my leading lady. Now, what about this job?
Edwin, I honestly don't want to bring this up again, but once and for all, it's got to be settled between us. I was not in the chorus of the Naughty Little Princess. I was the star.
Oh, not that again.
And you didn't pick me to be your leading lady. David Belasco had to talk me into it. You were known as the worst scene stealer on the American stage.
I? A scene stealer?
Yes. Face it, darling. I spent 5 years on the stage with you before I knew there was an audience. You so gallantly hid it from me.
This, then, is my penalty for loving an envious woman.
Envious? I never envied you. I stood aside as you took your vows. I was content and happy. But in all decency, allow me the memory of the little success I did have.
Say that again.
The whole thing?
No, just the end.
But allow me the memory of the little success that I did have.
Gads, what a reading. What presence. What fire. Oh, Lily, you still have it, old girl. You still got it.
Bravo, bravo.
Oh, stop it, both of you.
Go ahead, darling. Anything you want me to do.
Anything?
Yes.
Better strike while the iron's hot.
Edwin, this job that Charlie has for you is, of course, the starring role.
Yes, yes. Well, what is it?
An afternoon radio program.
Excuse me, I have a pretzel in the oven.
Agnes, stay here.
It had to be my own wife who said that. It couldn't have been a stranger. A stranger I could strangle, crush, and trample into the ground for suggesting that I, Edwin Montague, go into radio.
But Edwin...
Silence! Edwin Montague in radio? Never! Not as long as there is breath in my body.
You'd better have breath in your body, because unless you get a job, there will be no food in it.
You mean our money is gone?
Yes, darling. What do you think I have been using for the last few years to pay for your imported kippers and your imported cigars? Now, this radio job...
Radio? No, Lily, no. I'll dig ditches first.
Edwin, what is this newfound confidence you have in digging ditches? The only time you've ever held a shovel was in the plays Hills of Gold, and then on opening night you used the wrong end.
Oh, Lily, anything but radio. My friends at the Proscenium Club will stone me.
The Shalimar Soap Company will pay $200 a week. No one will know it's you. There will be absolutely no publicity.
No, Lily, I can't. Not radio. That is what killed the stage. If I must sell soap, at least let me maintain my pride and do it from door to door.
Edwin, are you going to take the job?
To be or not to be. That is the problem.
That is the question.
That is the question. Whether it's...
Edwin, yes or no? Well?
No one will know it's me.
Nobody.
Of course, you know that if the news leaks out that I am in radio, I shall automatically do myself in.
Naturally. Well, Edwin?
Oh, that this too solid flesh would melt and resolve itself.
Thaw and resolve itself.
Thaw and resolve itself.
Edwin, are you going to take the job?
To be or not to be.
Edwin, it pays $200 a week.
The starring role?
You play a character called Uncle Goodheart.
Uncle? Death, where is thy sting?
Well, Edwin, yes or no?
I must bow to the fates. Yes.
Edwin, I'm proud of you. I'll call Charlie.
Please. And now, if you'll excuse me, I'll retire to my study, where I'm going to make the final revision on my memoirs. I'm going to strike my own name out of it.
Have you the orange juice, Agnes?
Got it.
Black coffee?
Right here.
Are you sure it's 8 o'clock?
It's 5 after. Are you going to wake him up?
Here it goes. Edwin, darling, it's time to get up and go to the radio station for your first program.
Try it again and put some beef in it.
Edwin, darling, it's time to get up. Help me out, Agnes.
Okay, you take one ear and I'll take the other.
Let's go. Edwin, darling, it's time to get up. Wait, he's stirring.
What's happened? What is it?
It's time to get up, darling. It's 8 o'clock.
8 o'clock. Hey, 8 o'clock. God, I've overslept.
No, dear, you don't understand. It's 8 o'clock in the morning.
Morning? Why, that's ridiculous. Look, it's dark. The sun shines in the morning. I read that in a book somewhere.
Now sit up, sweetheart. Agnes has made some black coffee.
Right.
I hope it's still hot.
It is.
Edwin, this... Edwin? Edwin! Come on, Agnes.
Edwin, darling, it's time to get up.
Oh, Lily, this is ridiculous. Why, even as a baby, I never got up until noon.
Now just drink this coffee, sweetheart.
Oh, now, Lily, I can't be seen at this hour. People will think I'm a burglar.
Now, Edwin, you have to be at the studio by 9. No more nonsense. Agnes, get me his brown suit, a white shirt, and brown tie.
Coming right up.
Now the shoes and socks.
Here, honey.
Thank you. Now, Edwin, you dress while I... Edwin? Once more, Agnes.
Edwin, darling, it's time to get up.
Oh, all right, I'm up.
Hold it, cast. Before I start directing you in the first rehearsal of Uncle Goodheart, Mr. Springer, our head of production, would like to say a few words. Mr. Springer.
Thank you, Mr. Zinser. Ladies and gentlemen, I will be brief. Our sponsor is the Shalimar Soap Company. We go on the air directly opposite our biggest competitor's program, Aunt Agatha. Our program, Uncle Goodheart, must be a weapon. A weapon that will strike so hard, so true, that it will wipe Aunt Agatha off the airwaves. It is up to you. Carry on.
Okay, cast, let's rehearse it from...
Excuse me, but isn't this all a waste of time?
A waste of time, Mr. Monaghan?
Yes. First of all, I'd like to take a few weeks to work out the character, to sit with the writers, develop the...
A few weeks? Mr. Monaghan, this program goes on the air in half an hour.
Half an hour? You mean every week? I have to do...
Every week? It's every week 5 times a week.
5 times a week? Not with me, you don't. What am I, a jukebox?
Mr. Montague, this is radio.
What's up? What's up? Is there a problem?
It's nothing, Mr. Springer. This is Edwin Montague, our Uncle Goodheart.
How do you do?
I was explaining certain things to Mr. Montague. He is new to radio.
New to radio? Singer, for the leading role on a program as important as this, you use an unknown amateur?
An unknown amateur? Why, you filthy...
Mr.
Little...
Montague, this filthy little... This is Mr. Springer, the producer of the program.
Then, sir, I demand to know what's...
Mr. Springer, Mr. Montague is one of the great actors of the legitimate stage. It was a stroke of sheer luck to get him as Uncle Goodheart.
Oh, sorry I offended you, old man. Personally, I never go to plays. I always say, give me the movies. You see the best actors, and they let you smoke in the balcony.
The movies. My dear sir, it is men with brains like yours that make morons overconfident.
Rehearsal! Okay, cast, let's go. No music, let's just do a dry run. Bartley and Melissa drive up. Sound.
That must be the cottage over there, Bartley.
Do you think he's home?
Oh, he's got to be. It's our only hope. Oh, look, that must be he coming to meet us. Hello, Uncle Goodheart.
Hello, and...
Hold it! Mr. Montague, you were off mic.
Off mic?
Yes, please speak into the microphone.
Oh, thank you, but I don't use a microphone.
Yes, now let's take it from... I beg your pardon, Mr. Montague?
I said I don't use a microphone.
You don't use a microphone.
My good man, this may seem strange to you, but I come from an era of theater where an actor's voice did not need the aid of these artificial doodads in order to be heard. My voice projection is famous, you know.
But Mr. Montague...
Never! The voice that can be heard in the very last row of every theater in New York refuses to be a party to this mechanical subterfuge.
Mr. Montague, radio...
Never! Never!
No. Now, what is the trouble?
Nothing, Mr. Springer. It's just that Mr. Montague doesn't want to use the microphone.
No. If he doesn't want to use... What? If he doesn't want to use the microphone... He doesn't want to use the microphone!
I assure you, I can be heard without a microphone.
How about the people in Denver? Zinser, I hold you personally responsible for this.
Please, Mr. Montague, ever since I saw you in Macbeth when I was just a child, you've been my idol. Please trust me when I say that in radio, you have to speak into a microphone.
Oh, very well. So you saw me in Macbeth. Oh, remember this? I will not yield to kiss the ground before young Malcolm's feet and be baited with the rabble's curse. I throw my warlike shield. Lay on, Macduff.
Huh. What?
Wasn't he wonderful, Mr. Springer?
Zinzer, remember when I said that without a microphone they wouldn't hear him in Denver?
Yeah.
I think he could do it.
We'd better get on.
Mr. Montague will pick up where Melissa and Bartley approach you on page 5.
Oh, here it is. That must be the cottage over there, Bartley.
Do you think he is home?
Oh, he has to be. He's our only hope. Oh, look. That must be he coming to meet us. Hello, Uncle Goodheart.
Hello, and bless you, my children. Why, as I live and breathe, if it isn't Zeke Chickling's little girl, Melissa.
Oh, Uncle Goodheart, thank you for remembering me.
And bless me, child. By the way you are blushing, I'll bet this tall, good-looking fellow with you is your beau. Now, fess up.
Huh?
Please, Mr. Montague.
I would very much like to meet the writer of this epic. I've never seen a 3-year-old operate a typewriter before.
Please, Mr. Montague, we're trying to get a timing. Your line, Bartley.
I am Bartley Boswell, Uncle Goodheart. Doc Boswell's son.
Oh, Uncle Goodheart, something terrible has happened. Bartley and I can't get married.
Now, come, child. We must look at the sunny side.
Hold it. Mr. Montague, you'll have to speed that up a little.
Speed it up?
Yes, when you see me twirl my index finger like this, it means speed it up.
Your index finger. Mr. Zinzer, I am an actor, not an orchestra, and I refuse to be conducted like a 3-piece band. I shall read it as I feel it, and you keep your finger out of it.
But Mr. Montague, the character...
Young man, are you telling me, Edwin Montague, how to read
a
character?
All I'm trying to do...
You are a radio director, the lowest point a person can sink to and still stay out of jail due to vagrancy. You dare to do what even the great Belasco never presumed to do, to tell Edwin Montague how to play a character?
1 minute to air.
1 minute? Mr. Montague, the script is timed for a certain speed. You must fit into it.
I will not fit into this anthology of cliches. It must fit into me.
Zinzer, get rid of this troublemaker.
I'm going.
30 seconds.
Where is my hat?
Mr. Montague, we're going on the air.
It's a gray Homburg with a green feather.
It's sabotage, that's what it is.
Mr. Montague, you can't walk out.
I won't. I'll run.
Shalimar Soap brings you Uncle Goodheart.
He was sent here by Saperoni Soap. He's a dirty spy.
Why, you swine. I'll pull your nose off and let the air out of your head.
Quiet, please.
We find gentle, kind, lovable Uncle Goodheart seated on the steps of his little vine-covered cottage, waiting to give comfort and counsel to weary travelers. Listen.
Zinzer, this show has begun.
Mr. Montague, do the character any way you want.
Any way? Very well.
That must be the cottage over there, Bartley.
Do you think he is home?
Oh, he's got to be. He's our only hope. Oh, look, that must be he coming to meet us. Hello, Uncle Goodheart.
Your cue, Mr. Montague. Your cue. Here's your script.
Who needs a script? Hello and bless you, my children. Why, as I live and breathe, if it isn't Zeke Chickling's saber-toothed offspring, Melissa. And without a leash.
Oh, no.
I'll kill him. That's what I'll do.
Why, Uncle Goodheart, you remember me.
Only because you are impossible to forget. And who is this with you, this creature with the pre-shrunk head?
I'm Bartley Boswell, Uncle Goodheart, Jack Boswell's son.
Oh, Uncle Goodheart, something terrible has happened. Bartley and I can't get married.
Really? I don't know which one of you to congratulate first. Still, it would have been an extraordinary match. Yuck, yuck, yuck.
Why?
Get back, Mr. Springer.
Let me go, Zinzer. Let me at him.
Yuck, yuck, yuck.
Sounds awful. What else did he say on the program?
Well, then he tells this Melissa and Bartley that there's only one solution for their problem. Get married, buy a little home, move in, and then turn on the gas.
Turn on the gas?
So help me. At the end of the show, they even made an announcement. The ideas expressed on this program are not necessarily those of any human being.
Oh, I'm so afraid that something has happened to him. His program has been over for almost an hour.
Now, maybe he's in jail. There must be a law against what he did on the airwaves.
Agnes, this is no time to be... Shh, here he comes. Edwin, what happened? It's been over an hour since the show.
I'm sorry I'm so late. I had to keep circling and backtracking to keep them off my trail.
The phones have been ringing continuously. A Mr. Zinser and a Mr. Springer have been trying to get you.
Lily, you didn't tell them where we live.
Now, Edwin.
I think Springer carries a gun. I saw him reaching for something, and then he lunged at me when I ran out of the studio.
I was at the Birdwatcher's office, but Agnes heard the program.
The whole thing?
The whole thing.
Even yuck, yuck, yuck.
Even yuck, yuck, yuck.
Oh, Lily, after what I did to his radio show, it can never recover. Theater shall live again!
Oh, Agnes, there's someone at the door. Edwin, how could you?
I struck a blow for theater. I stand here brave and unafraid.
It's a Mr. Zinser and a Mr. Springer.
Oh, Lily, Lily, you have to hide me.
Show the gentleman in.
Yes, ma'am. This way, boys, and check your hardware.
You should know that the man who brought you up in the elevator is a Golden Globes champ. I can have him here in 2 seconds.
Mr. Montague, if you wish me to crawl at your feet, just ask.
Crawl at my feet?
Mr. Montague, will you ever forgive my horrible presumption in trying to tell you, the master, how to play a character?
What is going on?
If you want me to kiss your boots, command me.
Look, if you just came up here to make love to my feet, we...
Mr. Montague, the moment Uncle Goodhart went off the air, the telephone switchboard at the station lit up like a Christmas tree.
Listeners from all over the country are still calling to tell us, at last, a real down-to-earth character has been heard on radio.
A real...
Why, man, you hit the nation with the impact of a howitzer.
I did?
How could we have been so blind? It was you with your unerring dramatics that knew the country wanted a contrast to the sweet, kindly, sentimental, homey old radio character.
You gave them something new. A salty, down-to-earth, real-living Uncle Goodhart.
It's the greatest thing since Just Plain Bill.
Just Plain what?
One man telephoned all the way from Council Bluffs, Iowa, just to say, yuck, yuck, yuck.
It's sweeping the country.
Gad. Come, Caesar, we must let Uncle Goodhart rest. So he can reach new heights in tomorrow's episode.
See you in the morning, Mr. Montague.
Lily, they're crazy. They're madmen. People listened to that horrible thing I did, and they liked it.
The magnificent Montague does it again.
What have I done? What have I done?
Well, whatever you did, Dream Boy, keep doing it. It means imported kippers from now on.
Lily, you've missed the whole point.
The whole point?
Yes, it just struck me. Well, there I was, doing my best to be bad. And I couldn't. I couldn't. What came out was great.
Of course.
Lily, I suspected it for many years, but now at last I know. I am truly magnificent.
Next week and find out what happens when the magnificent Montague and radio meet head on. Remember, next week, same time, same station, it's the magnificent Montague created and written by Nat Hyken. In our cast, you heard Greg Porter as Edwin Montague, Dave Leese as Bartley, Karen Leese as Melissa, Mary Moore Campagna as Lily Boehm, Kim Turner as Springer, Beverly Washburn as Agnes, Mark Whitworth as Zinser, Mike Wheeler as the engineer. Our program was directed by Dan Schindler and produced by Joy Jackson. Live sound effects by Beth Schlansky and Marilyn Wilt. Music by Kevin MacLeod at Incompetech.com. The Magnificent Montague is broadcast on NBC from November 1950 to November 1951. It starred Monty Woolley as Edwin, the Magnificent Montague. Anne Seymour was Lily. Art Carney was Montague's father, and Pert Kelton was Agnes. It was produced by Nat Hyken. There are 37 episodes in existence, plus the audition. No egos were bruised in the making of this play. I am your announcer, Magpie McLaurin. This is ART, American Radio Theater.
Aw, gee, that's all the time I've got for today. Please stop by our website, AmericanRadioTheater.org, for more podcasts. You know, we put up a new one every month. Thanks for listening. Hey, see you next time. Over to you, Louise.
Okay, Joy. Thanks a lot and great work. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, it is that time again when I must unfortunately shut things down and wrap things up for this week's broadcast of Mike's Saturday Night Surprise. But don't worry, I've said it before, and I will keep saying it again and again. We will be back next week. So, all you have to do is come back and join us. You know where, when, and how. So, as usual, if there are any questions, comments, requests, maybe even a complaint or two, please address them to the MSS director. He can be found at mikeameli@earthlink.net. That's MIKEAMELI@earthlink.net. We will soon be releasing the key and turning over the room to you, the listening audience. Please do with it as you wish, for as long as you wish. But just remember, be nice to one another. Otherwise, this old stern librarian sitting next to me will be continuing to stare at you over the brim of her glasses. On behalf of myself and the rest of the MSS crew, have a great night, a great weekend, and goodbye.